Blog Talk Radio.
Yo, what's going on, everybody? It's Lean Keys, Real Talk. We out here tonight. Lee, what's going on, bro?
Oh, man, what's good, man? You know, just another day, another way. Episode 93, want to dedicate to Nipsey Hussle, man. Rest in paradise, bro. The guy was doing a lot of great things in his community. You know, another act of citizens violence, taking another young life. Everybody keep his kids and his wife in their prayers. Rest in peace, Nipsey Hussle. Me and my man Keys, man, we up here to, we got a lot to talk about, don't we, Keys?
Yeah, we do. One thing I just wanted to say, though, is that I never really knew the guy. I mean, I really didn't know a lot about him. I do remember back in the day, like probably like 4 years ago at this point, maybe 4 or 5 years ago, I think he had like a mixtape or an album, and it was called Crenshaw. Does that sound right? And
mixtape.
Yeah, it's called Crenshaw, right?
Yeah.
Yeah, because I remember I had a friend who used to always tell me to listen to him like years ago, and I just never did it. Like, I mean, I ended up listening actually to the I didn't do it for a while, but then he was like, man, like, if you're gonna listen to him, like, you gotta listen to his mixtape called Crenshaw. And I remember listening to like the whole thing, like all the way through. And but I just never really I never caught on with his music and never really knew a lot about him other than that time I listened to the mixtape. So, but I guess, you know, I've read some stuff about him and I watched, you know, some of his interviews and stuff, and like he seemed like he was a really good guy. So, you know, I feel bad. It seems like a lot of people are hurt by that. So he definitely touched a lot of people, you know. Rest in peace.
Amen. Yeah. All right, man. Well, let's get right to it, man. Your boy Justin Gaethje, man, did it again.
Yeah, so I just want to say one thing about that. Nah, right off top, I just want to say one thing. Remember when we were doing this show a couple months back, and I was like, man, know who I'd want to see Conor fight? Gaethje. Remember what you said? You were like, man, you only want to see him fight Gaethje because you know that's somebody he can beat. But you only said that when Gaethje was on a losing streak. Now Gaethje knocked out two guys. Gaethje has 2 first-round knockouts over top 10 guys. Now it's starting to look a lot different, huh? I told you about Gaethje,
not for
man.
Me, really. Not for me, really. Because I think stylistically, I mean, Gaethje looked good. I can't even lie. I mean, I knew Barboza was in trouble when Gaethje came out and leg kicked him. I was like, whoa, hold up. I was like, hold up. I think the first 45 seconds of the fight, it was like alternating leg kicks. I was like, whoa. I was like, man, this ain't going to be good for Barboza if Gaethje can take these leg kicks. And not only could Gaethje take them, he was dishing them out. Barboza led some more blues than his. But I think the fight with him and Conor is more stylistically a better matchup for Conor than somebody that's going to wrestle him, that's going to basically use all aspects of MMA, whereas I think Gaethje can wrestle, but he just doesn't. That's what I said when we talked about it.
Yeah, but that's not exactly what you said, but that's all right, though. I'm gonna let you slide with that one. But the difference is, it's all good. We're just going to let you rock out. I mean, that wasn't word for word what you said, but, you know, they don't got to know that. I just know you were hating on Gaethje before, but now it's looking different because he's destroying people now. Gaethje's like, it's just crazy because, you know, another thing about that and looking at the bigger picture is just in the month of March, like, we pretty much had a fight night card. We had a fight. Every week was fight week. Like, ever since that card in January where Dillashaw and Cejudo, the first ESPN, I'm pretty sure there was every week was fight week all the way up until, holy shit, all the way up, every week was fight week up until this week, actually. Yeah, because last weekend we had something, right? I forget. I'm driving right now. I can't think what exactly. Yeah, I can't think exactly what it was.
We had
Jason
and Barbosa last week.
Yeah, and then at the same time, it's like now this week there's nothing, so this is the first weekend without the first week that's not a fight week since January. I mean, and then next week you have the Holloway and Poirier. But the thing is that in the month of March you had four knockouts that three were main events. You had three knockouts in three of the four. No, it wasn't four main events, but you had four big knockouts, and three of them out of the four were from underdogs, because Masvidal was the underdog to Till, and he knocked out Till in what, the second round, and then this one Gaethje was the underdog to Barboza, and he knocked out Barboza in the first round, and then. There's one more. Pettis was the underdog to Wonderboy, and he knocked out Wonderboy in, I think, the second round, too. Just the point, though, is that you had underdogs knocking out the favorite in three out of three main events that we just saw, the last three main events.
But you know, that's kind of crazy because, like, if you really look at it, The Pettis Wonderboy fight, that really could have been a pick-em fight, because Pettis he's been game in his last two fights. I mean, he's really been putting on good performances, even though he's had to pull out due to a broken rib, pull out due to a broken hand. He were in all those fights. He was putting up a good performance. So, in a way, only way Wonderboy was actually favored is because he was naturally fighting in that division. I think with Gaethje and Barboza, I don't know why Barboza was favored. Maybe because he's been dominating strikers. He's known to dominate strikers. So I think that may have been why he was favored. And Derek Hill, man. Oh, good Lord. he was an overwhelming favorite and got slept. So, but anything can happen in the octagon. Once they lock that door, anything can happen.
Yeah, and I just think, you know, with those three knockouts, it pretty much just says, like, anybody can win pretty much any day. You know, that's always been a fact. But it gets forgotten a lot of the time, because a lot of fans, and including myself in a lot of situations, get excited about certain guys, you know, about certain prospects and whatever, and you get high on, you know, the wins they've had, and you end up saying, like, wow, this guy is really the better fighter. He's outmatched. You know what I mean? Like, people always think the better fighter wins, but, like, that really is not the case. Like, sometimes, like, even when you look at the tail of the tape, like, guys be like, oh, like, this guy's got, like, an 8-inch reach advantage. Like, he's definitely going to use his reach and win this. That doesn't always apply. Like, I mean, that can be a factor, and it's good things to look at, but it's just been proven lately that it really doesn't matter. Like, people, you know, could have easily said, you know, like, going off what you said, is like, okay, Barboza always beats strikers. So Gaethje, who really been, even though Gaethje has a wrestling background too, we more look at him as a striker. So anyone could easily say, well, Barboza is going to win. So I think that could be factored into why he was a favorite. But that's not the only thing, though. It's like Gaethje's pressure that he brought to Barboza, I think, was the biggest thing. You know, that was the X factor in the fight, which is early when you just seen him backing Barboza up against the cage, and he really just left him with no option. And he just hammered him out pretty much. And, you know, we could just see certain shots landing before the knockout, where you just knew, like, damn, like, Barboza's already taken way too much damage, like, way too early in this fight to still be in this fight. Like, I didn't think he'd get knocked out right there, but I definitely could see that it was like, okay, Gaethje's looking real good right now. Like, if anything, I think he's, I mean, he was easily winning the round, and he was on his way to dominating the fight.
Yeah, I thought Barboza made like a tactical mistake during that fight. I think when Gaethje comes out and he's using what you use against you, then basically you have to switch up and do something that he's not going to expect. I think Barboza should have tried to take him back. That would have gave Gaethje something else to think about. You know what I'm saying? That way, because Barboza is good on the mat. So when Gaethje hurt him with the leg kick and he was hurting him with the striking, basically his only recourse was, let me take the man down. Let me try something else, you know. And I just think he didn't do that. And I don't even think his coaches suggested it to him. Well, he got swept in the first round, didn't he?
Yeah, Barboza.
So, but I don't even remember his coaches saying, you know, anything to the effect of taking him down. And then this week, they posted a picture of Gaethje poking him in the eye, and then everybody saying that's why Gaethje caught him, because he got poked in the eye. I mean, his eye did look really bad, but he didn't complain about getting poked in the eye during the fight, so... I really can't put no stock into that. I look at that more as an excuse. So, Barboza will be back. Gaethje, we'll see who the UFC get him next. He said he don't want to fight Paul Felder because Paul Felder is under him. So, we'll see who the UFC gives him.
Well, the thing is, too, is that, like, Paul Felder's under him right now, but he's going to be even further underneath him in the rankings once they update the rankings, because when they showed it on the post-fight show, I think Gaethje was at number 8, and Felder was at number 9. So they just tried to basically manipulate the situation. They kind of just basically tried to take, you know, the facts that as they were displayed right there, and they showed it on the screen saying, oh, well, you know, they tried to create the moment from Felder and Gaethje, but by saying, oh, he's only one below you. Like, it's really not that. But, nah, it really ain't that, though, because once he moves up in the rankings, I think he at least goes up another, at least one more spot, possibly even two spots. Because I think Barboza might have been two spots ahead of him. So he would at least take that. So I think he moves up one, if not two spots. So he'd be even further ahead of Felder and really... There's no need for him to take that fight. I think
unless the UFC does something shady, like they move Barboza down 3, move Gaethje up 2, and then move Felder up 2. So that means Felder will be right behind Gaethje, and Barboza will be behind Felder. You know that you know they might do something shady so that it'll look more like a more competitive fight. But I think Gaethje won't fight him because he wants to fight somebody ahead of him. And if I was him, I would do the same thing. Because fighting somebody ranked lower than you really doesn't do nothing for you, basically. I mean, basically you fighting out of the spirit of competition. You're not fighting to move forward towards the belt when you're fighting somebody under you. So, I really think... One thing about your boy Gaethje, though, Keys, is I wish he would use his wrestling a little more, man. I think taking all this punishment just is going to make his career short. He's going to be a punch-drunk fighter when he retires if he keeps this style up. He needs to become a smarter fighter by using all the tools in his toolbox. I just don't want him to be another Diego Sanchez, man, or Ben Lieber, or, you know, guys like Chuck Liddell, guys that go out being knocked out, you know, especially when he has skills that he can use outside of just striking.
Yeah, and we've yet to see any bit of his wrestling yet in the UFC since he's been here. We haven't seen him use it at all. So, yeah, work smarter, not harder, right? That's what I've always been taught. So, I'm sure Gaethje, you know, is well aware of that. You know, I think in his last two fights, it seemed like he tried to pressure his opponent. What he basically did with Barboza looked just like what he did with James Vick. Like, that pretty much was the same. I mean, correct me if I'm wrong, but I'm pretty sure that was the same game plan how he stopped Vick in the first round. He pretty much just put pressure on him early, backed him up against the cage, and left and started throwing bombs on him and left him nowhere to go. And he got the finish. That was pretty much the same approach that he took to the James Vick fight, which I think that works, you know. But it's just certain guys that he's fought that you can't do that to. Like, I don't think he would have been able to do that versus a Dustin Poirier. Like, I just think Poirier, you know, first of all, you can't just – Poirier's got a tough chin. I mean, even though he's been stopped before, like, you know, Michael Johnson stopped him. McGregor stopped him. Like, yeah, but – Poirier doesn't go down that easy these days. Not Poirier in 2019 doesn't. So, unless Max Holloway can really prove me wrong. I mean, not that I ain't rooting for I'm not even trying to give a winner yet. We're not at that show yet. But I'm just saying, Poirier don't go out that easy. So, Gaethje wouldn't have been able to utilize a game plan like that versus that level of competition. I don't think Barboza in 2019 is as good as a Dustin Poirier, is as good as a Tony Ferguson, is as good as an Eddie Alvarez. Like, I really don't think Barboza is what he used to be. You know, I'm not saying that he needs to hang it up. He's definitely not on that level. I think he still beats most of these guys, but not the guys that I'm naming. Not, like, the top five lightweights in the world. Like, not them. But Barboza does beat, like, most lightweights in the UFC. Just once you get to that upper half of the top 10, Barboza is just not – I don't think he's top five. With how deep the 155 division is now, I just don't think Barboza is top five caliber for the 155 division because it's just – they're too good now. You guys are too good. And he's getting factored out of it.
Yeah. Yeah, and I think everybody that you name – they all well-rounded. They all not one-trick ponies. They can do it all. And I think, and I know we have brought this up on plenty of occasions before, is that one-trick ponies don't get it done no more in today's MMA, man. I mean, you might catch somebody slipping and you might clip them, but when you get in a competitive fight, a good fighter is going to take something away from you. They're going to make you do something else. They're going to make you dig deep in your bag and see what else you got. And case in point is John Jones versus Anthony Smith. Anthony Smith came in there. He had been on a good little run. He was very impressive, you know. And John Jones made him look pedestrian. John Jones made him look pedestrian because he took away the one thing Smith was actually doing good. He was actually being a quality striker at the time and, you know, using dirty boxing against the cage, and John didn't allow him to do that. And at the end of the night, we were both sitting there like, damn, what happened to Anthony Smith? So, but, you know, speaking of that, you know, me and you are both fans of Michael Johnson, man. Michael Johnson was on his way to winning that fight against Emmett. And he made one mistake. Emmett doesn't want to go to the mat. only thing he wanted to do is load up that right hand. Michael Johnson had been circling away from that right hand the whole fight. He made an error. He put his hands down, dunked his head, and got knocked out. Man, I was so heartbroken, man. I was like, oh, Michael Johnson, come on, bro. But Michael Johnson is the type of guy. But Keith, he's the type of guy that, man, you like seeing him fight because he fights the best. He never runs away from competition, you know. But, dog, you can't lose a fight like that when you up two rounds to nothing. And basically your opponent is a one-trick pony, man. There's no way he should have lost that fight. The only way he could have lost the fight was either getting submitted or getting knocked out, and we both know he got knocked out.
It is sad. Wasn't that the first time he's ever been KO'd too?
No, well, he got TKO'd against Gaethje.
Michael Johnson, was it a TKO?
Yeah.
Oh, wow. Oh, well.
Because he got gassed out, and Gaethje just started dropping bombs on him.
Yeah, you know, maybe it's the first time I think it was the first time he'd been knocked out clean like that, though. Because that was an actual knockout, not a TKO.
Yeah, Emmett put him to sleep. He are Boba.
Yeah, no, that was a good card. You know, it was – we've been seeing a lot of crazy stuff because another dynamic, you know, to look at when, you know, which is close to what you're saying is, you know, Michael Johnson got knocked out clean. I think that was the first time he'd ever been knocked out. Same thing with the previous weekend because Wonder Boy, I'm pretty sure, had never been knocked out in his career, and Pettis knocked him out. And I'm pretty sure Darren Till had never been knocked out either. He'd only lost he'd been finished, but he'd never been knocked out though. I mean Woodley, yeah, he lost to Woodley via submission, but I'm pretty sure he had never been knocked out, and Masvidal knocked him out. So it's crazy, man. Not only have the and it's just funny though, because it's the. The times that I don't root for the times that I don't that I'm quiet about the underdog is the time when the underdog comes through. The times when I'm vocal about the underdog is the times when they lose. But the times when I'm don't say nothing because Lee always says I'm the underdog guy. He thinks I have a thing with underdogs, and that's why I always root for the underdog, And that might be true, but I just think it's funny how when I am very vocal about the underdog winning is typically when they end up losing. But then when I don't really say anything and I either pick the favorite or I don't make a pick, the underdog comes out on top and in big fashion, like those couple of fights where I really didn't say anything about it. I don't even think I predicted those. I don't even think we might have did a show, but I don't even know if I even predicted those, to be honest. I don't think I said anything.
We didn't do predictions for this card. But just to give you some good news, bro, starting next weekend, it'll be 6 weeks straight of UFC. But they'll give you another 6 weeks of fights in a row starting next weekend.
That pretty much leads right up until I graduate college. By the time that weekend, I'll have a fight week every week up until I walk across the stage to get my college degree. Because I get my college degree on the 18th of May.
And actually, I think it's a card on that day.
That's a card that night?
Yeah, on the 18th of May, it's Dos Anjos. versus Kevin Lee.
Oh, word! Let's go! Yo, that's fire. All right, UFC. You ain't have to do all that. I appreciate it. Thank you for that gift. Thank you, Dana White. I think they've been listening to our show. The UFC knew I was graduating. They're like, I'm gonna pick a banger for a fight card, and we're gonna have Dos Anjos and Kevin Lee throw down for our boy Keys. That's what they said.
But you know what, man? We didn't talk about this on our last show, and actually, somebody brought it up on Twitter, and I kind of like read it, but I didn't read into it. Do you think the earliest starts to the cards are playing an outcome in the fights?
Wait, what'd you say?
Somebody tweeted Saturday.
You're saying the earliest has to go. What'd they tweet?
All right. Somebody tweeted Saturday after the fight that they attribute the knockout and submission finishes to the earliest starts to the fight cards. I never really thought about it because I don't think that it really matters. But do you think that matters? Do you think the fighters are fresher fighting early in the day than rather late at night? Because normally, you know, on the East Coast, the main event normally, the main card won't start until, about 8 o'clock?
10 o'clock.
Yeah.
10 o'clock for the pay-per-view.
I mean, 10 o'clock, y'all's time, 8 o'clock my time, I'm sorry.
8 o'clock would usually be the prelims. We'd be setting the start of the prelims at 8, if anything.
Yeah. So what you think about that? You think that's just a myth, or you think it plays a little bit of a – it has a little bit of something to do with it?
I would probably – that'd be an interesting thing for me to see somebody, like, do a write-up about. Like, if someone wanted to write an article and, like, give me a little breakdown, like, of a couple different reasons of how they believe fighters could be being affected, you know, having, negative effects on fighters because of the earlier start times, then I would be, you know, I would just need to see more analysis into it, because I really don't, like, the only idea you gave me is that, you know, that their schedules are a bit, their schedules are kind of like, are changed. Like, they lead up to the fight day, they have kind of less time to do what their normal routine is. So that's the only thing that's the only thing you really said, and that is, you know, that gives me something to work with, and I can start to buy into it. But I need to see a few more reasons, because that alone doesn't really explain why guys are getting stopped. I mean, you still have. Is that changing, like, your fight camp? Like, the reasons why guys are losing should have, I would think, more to do with what their training and their time spent, you know, over the course of the fight camp. What were you doing there? I don't see how the day of really has that much to do with it. I mean, maybe the weight cut or something, but maybe they got less time for the weight cut. But, I mean, guys are cutting too much weight anyways and too short of a time. So, if anything, they need to start cutting weight more gradually. Maybe that's the word. That'd probably be the answer to that, I would think. But guys cut too much weight in too small increments of time anyways. I think the errors would be in their fight camp. Don't they still have the same amount of time for the fight camp, regardless of when the event starts the day of?
Yeah, I mean, on what you want the weight cut, I think, you know, guys, especially like, I think it was Kevin Gastelum came in. Somebody came in, they were like 10 pounds over the fight weight, and he actually got 1 pound at a championship weight. in the week of the fight. I was like, man, that's a lot. But it's kind of crazy. I think guys should fight closer to their walk around weight, but there's nothing you really can do about that. But as far as like the earliest start to the pay per views and the main events and all that, I think it does play a small part in a fighter's performance, because a fighter, you know, you go through the whole day. Let's say you go through the whole day, you get up, let's say you get up 10 o'clock in the morning. Basically, you get up, probably eat breakfast, probably have a little workout, then you probably take a nap, then you get up, and you still got to sit around and wait. Whereas now, they probably get up probably about 8, have breakfast, probably have a little workout, probably watch a little tape, and then they probably go straight to the arena, and they're getting ready for the fight. So there isn't a lot of downtime between the time they wake up and the time they fight. I think it has a little bit of something to do with it, probably not a lot. I want to say Ariel Helwani actually tweeted that out last week about the earlier start time. So, you know, I just wanted to, you know, run that past you, see whether or not you thought it was maybe something that you know, that probably had the fighters a little fresher, or, you know, that play a part into their performance. Because we have been seeing a lot of good fights since they went to this earlier start time.
Yeah, that's my bad. I'm in the car wash right now, so it's kind of loud.
That's all right.
Can you hear the air dryer?
So, go ahead.
What did you say?
I said, go ahead.
Nah, I was saying it was mad loud because the air dryer is in the car wash. I was wondering if the sound was going through. I was trying to mute myself out so it couldn't be heard. But yeah, no, we've definitely been seeing a lot of good fights lately. But I don't know. Like I said, I would still want to. I mean, I like where you're going with it, and you know, whoever you said that was their analysis of it, I just would want to see it more. I would want to see it on paper or like an analysis video or something like that, because to give me more to go off of. Because it just right now, it could be. It's a could be to me. I really don't know if I fully buy into it, but it definitely it could be. I could see how things could be changed, you know, due to the new scheduling and all that. But, you know, in terms of us, though, I mean, not to take away, you know, anything from the fighters, but I do like the earlier cards, though. I'll tell you that. I've been really liking the earlier cards lately. So I know pay-per-view, they're probably going to still do the same time and everything. But, Fight Night, I'm pretty sure Fight Nights are going to be, that's going to be the standard now. I'm pretty sure most of them, or if not all of them, are going to be, you know, main card, 8 o'clock start times, which, as long as, you know, the time zone doesn't conflict and, you know, it can be broadcasted at that time, which I like.
Yeah, man. I'm definitely with the earlier start time. I'm definitely with that. But go ahead.
Because it's just nice, you know, to be able to not, like, I mean, watching the fights later at night, it just, I mean, I end up being so tired, like, you know, and then watching the fights, like, it almost does feel like it's dragging out a little bit because, like, it's so late, and I kind of just want to get going to bed eventually. Like, by the time it's like, all right, now it's, you know, 12:30 at night, and it's like, all right, the main event's like, they're walking to the octagon now. It's like, man, I mean, just being able to have that happen, but be, you know, 3 hours earlier is just really nice. Like, to be able to see the main event popping off. I mean, this last main card was at 7, and the main event was popping off by like 9:30. So, or around that time. So that was really nice to see that. You know, one thing that I wanted to ask you about, though, and this is unrelated to that, before I take it somewhere else. So your boy, Demetrius Johnson, debuted in the ONE Championship this past weekend. And I want to say he had a first, it was a second round submission. You know, he got his first win in ONE Championship in the, I think it's the Flyweight Grand Prix. And he had a second round submission. I didn't see the fight, but I did catch the coverage afterwards. How you feel about that?
Man, I watched the hot dog. Actually, they had, I want to say the whole fight is on YouTube. You can watch the whole fight on YouTube. I watched the whole fight. The guy he was fighting, man, he came out as a game buster. I mean, he was on fire. He came out. He was pressuring DJ. I was like, whoa, I ain't never seen this before. So, you know, he was pressuring DJ, backing DJ up. DJ basically was, you know, trying to fill the guy out. And then probably like towards the middle of the first round, you know, DJ started landing some strikes and stuff, you know, started filling the guy out. And then in the second round, man, he put a choke on this guy that was so tight. I was like, whoa. He looked as dominant Saturday night as he ever looked in the UFC. I was like, man, this guy is still a beast. I think one thing that he probably is going to struggle with in ONE is in the UFC, he was so much faster than everybody else. I think in ONE, those guys are as fast or if not faster than him. I think that's something that he's probably going to have to change his style up a little bit and probably become, I mean, he was already a technical fighter, but he's probably going to have to become even a more technical and a more strategic fighter over there in ONE than he was with the UFC. But he still looks good. He's still fast. He's still going for finishes. And he looked good, man. I mean, you know, I'm one of his biggest fans, so I might sound biased, but I want to see what he looked like in his next fight over there. You know, see whether or not he make any adjustments. You know, whether or not he comes out and be the aggressor. Because he definitely looked good, man. He looked really, really good.
So, I haven't watched the fight on YouTube. I really didn't know that it would be on YouTube. But when you say that he looked as dominant as he ever did in the UFC, are you just saying that was his best performance ever? Or I feel like you're not saying that. You're saying that he looked like the DJ before, you know, his last fight, like the DJ versus Ray Borg, or like in all his title defenses, DJ.
No, it wasn't his most dominant or his most impressive performance. It definitely wasn't his most impressive. Only reason I said it wasn't his most impressive is because you could tell that he had a little bit of ring rust. You could tell that he had to do more figuring out his opponent. But at the same time, he's always a smart fighter. You know, he never put himself in harm's way. He never really takes shots. But he did what DJ does, man. He found a hole in his opponent's game. Exploded that hole and got the submission. And that was one of the tightest chokes, man, I have ever seen DJ use, man. I don't see him do a lot of submissions, but that choke there came out of nowhere. It was so fast and so deep. But, you know, like I said, I want to see his next fight. I want to see whether or not he makes any adjustments to his game. You know, whether or not he adjusted his speed over there, with him probably not being the fastest guy. So he looked very good, man, very, very good. Not his most dominant, not his best performance, but definitely he was Demetrius Johnson.
All right. You know, did that is his success in that flyweight tournament gonna make you have to be, you know, tuning into all the cards he's on now?
I don't know, because man, they have so many fights on their fight card. I think they have 16 to 17 fights on their event. And
yeah, that was a lot, man.
And you know, when you have that many fights on a card, basically you have to really, for what me and you do, for the NBA, UFC pundits, you know, UFC super fans, you know, our show is based on the UFC. For us to be able to honestly evaluate the one championship, we would have to get to know all the fighters, man. I just don't see me trying to get to know all the fighters, but I would tune in to a DJ fight. I'd probably tune in to Sage Northcutt's first fight, you know, see how he looked. I know Eddie's been faring so good in his first fight, and you know, I tweeted that, you know, Eddie, I want to say, did he lose his first fight in the UFC? I want to say he lost his first fight in the UFC, and then he went on a tear.
Alvarez?
So,
yeah, I think he did his first fight in the UFC, but then he pretty much went on like a championship run after that and won the belt.
Yeah, so I'm thinking that maybe that's just the trend with him, that maybe he loses his first fight in the organization, and then he figures it out, and he goes on to become a dominant fighter. Because when you look at the highlights of his fight from this past weekend, you'll definitely be like, is that Eddie Alvarez? So he definitely didn't look good. And I tweeted out that maybe he took his opponent lightly. I sure hope nobody would ever do that in the octagon if he gets seriously hurt. But, you know, coming from the UFC and going to an organization like ONE, which is looked at as basically a stepchild, maybe he just thought the fighters would be that way too. So he definitely didn't look good at all, man.
Yeah, actually, you know, I didn't see the footage from his fight either, to be honest. But I did see the picture he posted on Instagram. I think it was earlier today. And he was looking pretty messed up, bro. His eye, I think it was his left eye, was looking really messed up. I don't even know how his eye got, like, how, like, he got punched so, he got cut so clean, his eye, it was kind of like scary looking, like, it was really gross, to be honest. I really didn't understand how his eye got like that. Like, he got hit hard, bro. I didn't expect this out of him, you know, starting out over there.
Yeah, I saw the picture he put on Instagram, too. And, yeah, his eye looked really, really bad. His eye looked really, really bad. But, you know, maybe his eye looked that bad because Eddie has done a lot of wars, and maybe he got that cartilage damage around his, you know, on his face. So maybe it just looked bad because of that. But he definitely didn't look good, man. Overall, I just don't know, man. Maybe he was just trying to figure it out, you know. Let me get my feet wet. Let me move around a little bit. Let me try to figure out his timing or whatever. But it just didn't work. It just didn't work for him.
Yeah, we'll have to just see what happens. Because, I mean, I'm pretty sure they were both
entered into, like, their own Grand Prix, right? Wasn't, like, each one part of a Grand Prix?
Yeah, I think Eddie was in the lightweight and DJ is in the flyweight.
Yeah, so, we'll have to just see what happens. Him being, who he is and, the name, I'm sure they're going to book Alvarez a fight as soon as he wants one. And, we'll be seeing him back in there sooner than later. I mean, getting stopped like that, he'll probably want to take some time off, but we'll probably see him back in there sooner than later. So I hope to see him make I wouldn't say a quick turnaround, but I hope to see him in good health, in good health and good spirits soon and come back stronger. Because I've always been a fan of Alvarez. So I want to see him do good. I don't think he's at the end of his career yet. So I want to see him come back and do good.
I still think he got some fights in him. I still think he can be competitive. But at the same time, he's been in a lot of wars, man. I think now is the time to become when you're at this part of your career, it's time to start switching things up, make your opponents think of other things you can do to them. Take them down every once in a while. Go to the mat every once in a while. Don't always be standing and banging. I think that takes a lot off of a fighter's career, is absorbing all those shots to the head, the body, stuff like that. So I think that's why, at maybe his age, he probably might want to start grappling a little more, think takedowns and set up punches and stuff like that. So, Eddie, man, we like you. We love you, man. Come back bigger and stronger, dog.
Hell yeah. I wish the best for Eddie Alvarez. We'll see what happens. I do think that that's a good point. A lot of people should – you've been saying this for a while. A lot of guys need to get more well-rounded so they can compete with the competition that's out here in today's fight game. But at the same time, it's like they need to do that for their own health and their own safety and their own – longevity, because it's not really just about being able to beat guys and become world champion. It's just about doing that in the safest way, ensure a long life for you and for your family's sake. So it would be I think it would be in good interest for some of these mainly guys who mainly stand up to start using some other elements of their game and not just, absorbing tons of shots every fight, because it's definitely not. Alvarez and Gaethje both pretty much, like, their last three or four fights each, both absorbed. Gaethje's last two fights, he barely even, got hit. But, probably his last two or three fights before that and Alvarez's last two or three fights, period, the two of them both absorbed a ton of shots. So, and somebody like Gaethje has the, diverse skill set to be able to take guys down and put in some work on the mat. I don't know why he doesn't do that. But, guys like that, I think they, one factor might be the performance bonuses. A lot of those guys want that 50K at the end of the night. Because a lot of these guys really don't even get paid nothing for, how long they've been in the game. I think Jeremy Stephens, he's another guy who, absorbs a lot of shots, but Jeremy Stephens, I want to say he made like 60 grand for his last fight when he fought Zabit. I want to say it was like 64,000. And when I read that, I was like, man, this guy has like over 20 fights in the UFC and he's not even breaking 100K on the biggest, biggest MMA platform anywhere, like world renowned, most well known, multi-billion dollar organization can't pay their guys that been putting on great fights for the fans forever more than it's just ridiculous. So, I mean, I know guys want to win performance bonuses just because they more or less get paid dirt compared to what they should be getting paid. You know, I think a lot of the fighters are criminally underpaid.
Yeah, and I think I sure hope this doesn't happen. But I think the only way that gets improved is if the fighters form a union. You know, like the NFL has an NFL Players Union, the NBA has an NBA Players Union, you know, Major League Baseball has a Players Union. I think that's the only way that players would get, you know, their right amount of money that they should be making. But only thing about when you have a players union is normally strikes happen, work stoppages happen. There's definitely a lot of stealing, stealing my ideas, stealing my fights and stuff like that so people can make money. But I think that's the only way that they could make the money they deserve is if they form a union. But normally when nothing – forming a union can be dangerous also.
Yeah, I thought that they almost did form a fighters union like 3 or 4 years ago. I thought, you know, Georges St-Pierre was, you know, deeply involved in it and what have you. I could have sworn that I saw that. I don't really know what ended up becoming of it, but do you remember that?
I thought it was the girl, Avenger, that was trying. I know George did bring it up. When he retired the first time, he brought it up. But I want to say Avenger, she's the one that's been driving a train here lately about forming a union and, you know, fighters' rights and all that. But it's just hard to form a union when each individual is basically out for their own success. You know what I'm saying? Because it's definitely an individual sport.
Yeah, that's true. And I mean, just piggybacking off of that, one thing that I was watching earlier today was on Below the Belt, you know, Brendan Schaub's. I was watching that, and he was talking about I don't know if it was straight from his account or if it was like somebody reposted it or what it was. I don't know if it even released today or when it was, but it was definitely fairly recent. I mean, he was talking about the changes since the ESPN deal and how, you know, they had the negotiations with McGregor about the co-main event spot, and then he didn't want the co-main, so then they basically just bounced the whole idea from the card, and now that I don't even think they're in negotiations with McGregor anymore. And Schaub was just talking about how now that they have this ESPN deal, it's great for the UFC, but Schaub said it's great for the UFC, it's terrible for the fighters. And I think what I got from it was that he was saying it seemed like now with the ESPN deal, they're trying to – I mean, super fights are still – like you can still see the fights you want to see, but they're taking it out of the hands of the fighter to be able to be making demands and fighting on their terms and, you know, wanting all these certain specifications for them to make a return and things like that. And, you know, just – it was like mid-2018 when, you know, there was rumors about a GSP Khabib Nurmagomedov fight, and those negotiations also fell through. And it just, and then GSP ended up announcing his retirement after that, you know, that had to have been some kind of reflection of, you know, where the negotiations left off at, and just how bad did they fail for him to announce his retirement after that. He must have had, you know, some kind of indicator that said, all right, this fight is absolutely not happening. The UFC is not willing to meet, you know, his terms, and now I should just ride off into the sunset. This is the perfect time. So it just seems like, I guess I need to look a bit more into it, but based on what Schaub was, the way he was relaying the information just sounded like it can be good for fighters who just want to go in there and fight. I don't know if, like, their pay will change, whether it'll go, like, up or down. Hopefully it goes up, because ESPN is a more, I would think, has more money than Fox, and they have, you know, more, you know, they're doing a lot more promotion for the UFC, and it seems like they're pretty well invested, and even a bit more invested than I thought, you know, arguably a lot more invested than I thought that they would be in the UFC, and they've been doing a lot of things for the UFC, you know, to make them even bigger and get, you know, more eyes watching. It just seems like probably for the superstars, and, you know, it's like they're moving away from the model of pay-per-view stars. Like, there's no such thing as, you know, is this guy going to fight anymore? It's just like, oh, no, we're going to offer you this fight, and if you don't want to fight this guy, then see you later. It's no more like, oh, I'll return if I can fight this guy. You know, it seems like it's becoming more on the side of just the UFC. You know, if we offer you this fight, this is the fight we want to make, and that's it. If you don't want it, then we don't need you. How do you feel about that? How do you feel about that, bro?
I'm with you, man. I think it's a tough one, Keys, because I think fighters, you have to be selfish to a certain degree because it's your career. You know, it's the amount of money you can make. Whereas if you are part of if you're part of a union, basically everything is dictated to help the group, not the individual. So I would probably have to go back and read more about what GSP was proposing, but I do remember him being definitely at the forefront back in the day of, you know, probably forming a union. And me personally, I don't think it's a bad thing, especially with the UFC making the money that it's making now. They are making crazy money now just off of the ESPN deal alone. They're making crazy money. So, and you should treat the fighters more as your partners than as employees. And I think that's the problem with the NFL. The NFL treat their players more like employees than partners, whereas the NBA treat their employees as partners. Treat the players more as partners than employees. And I think, you know, we'll see what happens, man. I don't think it could be a bad thing, but I do think when you hear the word union, you start getting bad thoughts of strikes, you know, stuff like that. And I just won't want that to happen to the UFC.
Yeah, it's, you know, it's definitely, it's a pretty complex subject, you know, especially, we only got a few minutes left. I'm pretty sure we only got a few minutes left. Can you see where we're at?
Yeah, we got about 25 seconds left.
Yeah, I mean, it's a bit complex of a subject to, I mean, we only got, you know, a few seconds left. So, I mean, we'll probably have to revisit this one the next time. But I definitely think, you know, just with my closing thought that, I mean, it would have its pros and cons. But like you said, you know, in a game where a lot of fighters are probably out for their best interest, and, And from what I understand from it, the union would probably be to get, I mean, to make some kind of unity where we can get, you know, more respect and rights for everybody, instead of just, you know, I want to be, you know, having this one pay-per-view star and this is the guy who's running the show here. It's like, nah, like, we all want to get our fair share of the pie when we come to the table, because we've all, you know, we've all worked our asses off our entire life to get to this point and to put on, you know, great performances that we put on and get to the top of the game. So we all want, you know, our fair share of the money that's being made and such and so forth. So it definitely
and plus the fighters, you know, and plus the fighters make the UFC. If the UFC didn't hire the fighters, they wouldn't be an organization. So that's why the UFC should look at the fighters more as partners than they should as employees, because without the fighters, you have no organization.
So that's definitely something that, you know, hopefully if anybody's hearing this right now, anybody important that can make some, you know, make some things happen, you know, take their fighters into consideration with major moves going forward, and just make your company, well, not the company, but make the fighters who built your name, and not just, you know, the big names, but the fighters who we've been watching for years and years that put on excellent fights, and, you know, all these guys who got, you know, 20 plus 30 fights in the UFC, all these veteran fighters that have been, you know, unafraid of fight any competition. Respect everybody, everyone that's making your name what it is. Just show them a little gratitude. That's what I think going forward.
Yeah, I'm with you on that, man. Because basically, I mean, you hate for it to sound like this, but actually it's true. The UFC is built on the backs of the fighters. It's built on the lives of the fighters. Because every time they step in the octagon, they basically put their life on the line. So, and I just think that they should probably look at that and think and look out for the fighters a little better.
Yeah, absolutely. I agree with that.
Well, all right, man. Another good show. We covered a lot tonight. Any closing words for you?
Nah, nothing really. Just, you know, actually, yeah, I do have something I want to say. And this don't even have to do with UFC or nothing like that. So when we first kick off the show, you know, Lee brought up, you know, the late Nipsey Hussle. You know, I had just mentioned that I really never knew the guy. I mean, of course, I don't know him personally, but I'm saying even as an artist, you know, even from, you know, the artist perspective, I never really knew, you know, his music that well or really, you know, followed him much at all. But, you know, I always knew of him. I just never realized, I mean, yeah, I can just easily see how many lives he's touched. And I guess, you know, he seemed to be like a really great person and wanted to better his community and make the world, make changes to make the world a better place and make the environment around him a better place. So, you know, and I don't know what ended up happening or, you know, I don't know all the details of this, but I mean, I know the guy was shot multiple times. You know, I heard he was shot multiple times outside of the store, of his store that he owns. And it just, you know, in my mind, I could chalk it up to just more senseless street violence. You know, I never been around that kind of lifestyle, so I have no idea what it's like. You know, I'm not out in these communities where, I mean, a lot of this stuff is happening. But, you know, I don't get me wrong, there are, like, you know, shootings here and there, you know, in the city where I live at, and people getting stabbed and murders happening. There's things like that, but it's not... You know, I don't know about the lifestyle that these guys are living, but one thing I can just say is the senseless street violence. Now, I wish that it would stop. I wish people would stop being. I wish more issues in the world could be talked out and things wouldn't have to go to, oh, I got to kill this guy. Now, I wish it wouldn't always come to that. That's probably my closing statement right there, that I wish that more things could be talked out and that guys wouldn't always have to, you know, think, oh, I got to kill this guy to work this out. I mean, nowadays you can't even fight somebody with your hands. Like, a lot of people, I know people that, you know, thought they were going to fight with their hands and end up getting stabbed. You know what I'm saying? And stabbed and almost killed when they're used to fighting with their hands. So clearly the times are changing, and you can't just fight somebody, you know, with your hands anymore. It's not that. People are out to kill you. And like I said, I'm not in a community where, you know, I'm seriously affected by this, but, you know, I just wish the violence would stop, and that's why I always close out with everybody stay positive and just do a little bit to make the world a better place every day.
And I totally agree, man. Senseless violence always ends with a negative outcome, man. And this is one of those things. And actually, Nipsey Hussle, he was scheduled today to meet with the chief of police of L.A. to see whether or not they could come up with a way to decrease the gang violence in L.A., man. And, the guy was doing some positive things. He was a former gangbanger, but he gave that up to become entrepreneur, a rapper, a real estate investor, a community philanthropist, and he got shot, and then he got shot by somebody in his crew. They had an argument. The guy left, came back. They shot him 6 times. So, I always close the show. Well, I've been closing the show here lately with love, live, laugh. Tell somebody you love them. Live your life to the fullest. And make sure you have a good laugh every day. Today, I think I'm going to close it with, we as people, man, we got to learn how to value another person's life. In today's age, people doesn't value another person's life. For somebody to get that mad at somebody when they will shoot them 6 times, that means that they don't value another person's life. And we should value each day we live, and we should value each other's life, man, because we don't know what that person's striving to do. That person probably could be the next doctor that sparks a cure for cancer or Alzheimer's or something. Stuff like that, man. And that's what I mean by value another person's life, man. Me and Keys, we really don't try to get too deep, on our show. But sometimes we have to take this route to express our opinions, maybe our show will reach somebody, somebody that was thinking about going to do something negative. Maybe they listen to our show and they go and do something positive, what I'm saying? And, value each other's life, man. Human life is precious. We only get one. So, do your best to make the world a better place.
And that's a fact. That's pretty much, I couldn't have said it or closed it better myself.
All right, man. With Keys, man, once again, it's a pleasure doing the show with you, bro. I always look forward to this. This is our platform where, two guys that met on Twitter that decided to have their own show. Two guys that now have their own show and actually write for a web-based company now to actually have another platform. And, two guys are doing something positive, man. And hopefully those out there in our listener audience your takes on from us every week. And we appreciate y'all listening. And in closing, I'm going to go back with the old school today. Peace.